Welcome to Soundprint. I'm Lisa Simeone. Every country has its own particular way of talking about people from every other country. Whether using terms that are affectionate, taunting, or downright insulting, it seems people just can't help themselves. They come up with all kinds of ways of describing different national characteristics, whether actual or perceived. And they can sometimes wield those terms as a weapon. Think of ethnic or racial slurs. We all know them, we've all heard them, and we can all choose either to use them or not to use them. I think about this every time I hear someone denouncing immigrants in this country, because the fact is that every single person listening to my voice right now, unless he's an American Indian, is either an immigrant or the offspring of immigrants. Every single one. This country is a country of immigrants. It's that simple. Yet lots of people still don't get it. In Patchogue, New York, lots of them didn't get it either. There, they made sport of going out and beating up immigrants, specifically immigrants from Ecuador. You know, just for fun. Until one day, in 2008, they killed one, and it made national news. Today's Soundprint is produced by Charles Lane, a reporter who covered the story for the local public radio station WSHU. It's called Bean Jumping.
Jeffrey Conroy admitted to police in a written statement on the night of the stabbing that it was he who plunged a knife into Lucero's torso.
A group of seven young men with hate in their heart went after Marcelo Lucero and his friends.
This is a green line to the hate crimes that's going to keep growing up in the country. What Long Island is doing is sending the wrong message to the country.
The accused assailant, Jeffrey Conroy, took the stand Thursday to testify that he did not stab Lucero.
We didn't believe that one. We didn't believe that one. We looked at all the facts, and the facts didn't point in that direction.
How emotional
was sentenced today. Jeffrey Conroy received the maximum sentence, 25 years in state prison.
I had gotten a phone call early that Sunday morning from the fire department that there had been an incident, and I made a contact.
Paul Pontieri is the mayor of Patchogue. He's the grandson of a bricklayer. You can tell from his bearish hands and heavy shoulders that he grew up playing bricks, too. In the corner of his office, there's a weathered photo of his grandfather building the sidewalks of Patchogue. Pontieri likes to show that photo to everyone and say that it was his dad, an Italian immigrant, who helped build Patchogue.
And as the day began to wear on, as the information began to coalesce itself into a more clear picture of what happened, your stomach begins to turn, and you try to kind of sort out that where do we fit into this as a community, and where is this going to bring our community? It probably strikes me today as it did that first morning, because it's not the community I grew up in.
Just so you get a sense of the community itself, let's take a ride down by the pool. This place here, Jay's, they've been here 70 years. This went out of business. To the left here is a band shell. And, come the summertime, we run our concerts down here.
Pontieri loves Patchogue and beams with pride when he shows off this quintessential all-American suburb.
Yeah, I grew up, like I think I mentioned to you, a couple blocks from here. It's just really neat.
But things in this small town started to change.
We have always had a Latino-based to our community over these last 30 or 35 years. It has grown over the last 10 years from a 12% in the 90s to probably closer to 32, 33%, even higher than that now.
At first, it was just the men. But soon women and children began coming, building a parallel community, one that exists in the shadows and doesn't fit what Pontieri calls the Little League theory.
The Little League theory is that when I grew up, or my kids grew up, I'd lean on the fence, I'd watch my son play ball, and I'd talk to the person next to me. And the person next to me spoke English, so we talked about our kids, and our relationship was based upon our kids. Most of the Latino population, particularly in Patchogue, still haven't got to that point where they come to the Little League fields, where they feel comfortable integrating themselves into the Latino. Their kids do. The kids do beautifully. But it's we, the adults, that haven't made the transition. I think it's we, the adults, that frame that conversation.
And as Mayor Pontieri found out late on a November night in 2008, living in the shadows of society permitted violence to go unnoticed. A man was murdered.
within that week afterwards, I went to the vigil site any number of times late at night. One night when I was there, there was a gentleman there and we were talking about it, and he said to me, "This has been happening, and it happened to me." And I said, "So what'd you do?" He said, "Well, I put my hands over my head and I got hit." I said, "Well, why didn't you tell anybody?" And he smiled and he looked at me and talked about being illegal and this, that, and the other thing. And then I asked him why he didn't fight back. And he said, "Oh, you never want to hit an Anglo, a North American." He said, "If I hit him, if I fight back, and he went to the police, they'd arrest me."
For Latinos in Patchogue, interacting with the police department meant having your immigration status checked. Latinos were afraid of the police because it could mean deportation.
Lola Quesada aquí?
Es calm.
Oh, not yet?
It's not here, yeah.
Okay. Do you speak English?
A little, not too much.
I'm sorry, my Spanish isn't better. Sorry,
After Lucero was killed, the Suffolk County Police Department tried a new, friendlier approach to proactively reach out to Latinos and help them solve their problems. And Guido Santos has a problem. He's an undocumented immigrant, and he says the last person he worked for didn't pay him.
No pay me 3 weeks ago. Yeah, no pay me nothing. I have phone, I have everything. I call every day, every time, nothing. This is my problem. I need money, you know?
So he called Officer Lola Quesada to ask for help. She's a Spanish-speaking outreach officer, and part of her job is to change the way immigrants see the police, encourage them to come out of the shadows.
Okay, had to bring my book. That's a... ¿Podemos hablar? ¿Su cuarto es arriba?
When she finally arrives, Santos leads us up the ramshackle stairs of the house he rents. It's diced up into several apartments, with mattresses leaned up against nearly every wall in the place. Santos lives in the closet of one of the back bedrooms. It's just big enough to fit a mattress and a pile of English language textbooks.
No, no se preocupe. Tranquilamente.
Sorry.
It's okay. Okay. Ahora, necesito, por favor, un documento con su nombre. Su apellido, todo eso tiene usted. Basic English. They try. Primero dígame, ¿cuándo pasó? ¿Dónde pasó? ¿En qué estaba trabajando usted?
Officer Quesada sits on Guido's mattress and begins taking his complaint.
Lo que necesito darle a usted para dónde tiene que irse.
Okay. Yo trabajaba antes aquí, pero lo que pasa que mi jefe se fue para Florida.
¿Trabajaba dónde?
Even though there's nothing she can really do about it, she calls it in.
Yes, hi, this is Officer Quesada from headquarters.
Quesada says that these kind of labor disputes are common among immigrants because unscrupulous employers know that most illegal immigrants are afraid to go to the police.
What they're telling me is that they were fearful coming in to make any questioning because of their own background. For example, they come from other countries. Their police agencies are not proactive. They might not be proactive. So usually if they deal with the police, isn't a criminal, you know, I'm going to handcuff you, I'm going to take you to prison. That's what they think about the police. You know, so they come with that perception of the police department. So we're trying to break that. We're trying to let them know that we are here, not always in that manner. We're here also in a proactive, and the police department has given me this opportunity to give them that information.
And speaking Spanish is a new opportunity for Guido and the Spanish community.
You know, I don't speak too much English. I speak a little. He speaks Spanish.
Okay, great. Thank you. Have a good day. Okay. Yo le voy a dar una copia de esto.
Okay.
Para que usted tenga para sus records.
Guido has an overflowing smile washed across his face when Quesada shows him his police report. He nods vigorously and waits for Quesada to stand before asking about another matter, something to do with a friend's truck, and he leads Quesada out back.
What was his concern?
When is the expiration of the registration of his car?
A common question, the kind Officer Quesada says she gets when people are comfortable with the police. Latin American immigration to the U.S. is different than previous waves of European immigrants. They aren't rooting themselves in Patchogue. It's more like a revolving door where people stay for a few years in Patchogue and then go home. In the case of the Latinos in Patchogue, they all come from a town high in the Ecuadorian Andes called Waliseo. Waliseo is a traditional Latin American town arranged around a central plaza with a fountain and an open-air market. It's quiet here and isolated. The town is surrounded on all sides by towering green mountains with sharp peaks that scrape the clouds. The air is warm and crisp and clean. It's almost like Shangri-La.
What's the coolest thing about Waliseo?
Es para mí el clima. Yeah, lo más bonito que tiene Waliseo.
The most beautiful thing that Waliseo has is the weather.
Each day in Waliseo is the same as the next. Women are out early walking along the narrow brick-paved streets to the market to shop for daily groceries. Hired kids in petty carts bring everything back for them, while the men gather outside shops to laugh and tell stories. The buildings are 3 and 4 stories tall, with colorful adobe walls that make the streets burn in a pink glow as the sun slides across towards mid-afternoon. Soon enough, a quiet settles over the town, and only murmurs can be heard coming from the well-lit kitchen windows, spilling shadows of life onto the darkened streets. Tomorrow, it will start all over again. That's why people from Waliseo like the town of Patchogue.
Que Pacho es un pueblo pequeño. Como es Waliseo un pueblo pequeño, no?
Waliseo is a small town, and Pacho is a small town, too. Waliseo is far from the city, and Pacho is far from the city.
Fernando León, publisher of Waliseo's newspaper El Pueblo, says every family here has at least one person living in Patchogue. They go there to get rich, quick.
Es decir, es el típico sueño americano, no?
Actually, that's a typical American dream, what we call here American dream. The idea that easily and fast, like in 5 years, you will get all these things.
In some cases, the dream comes true, and people send back money to Waliseo, turning this once tiny village into a boomtown almost. This development looks like it's right out of a San Diego suburb. There are 60 townhouses lining the street, each brightly colored, and they have a wrought iron fence out front with gilded points, and there's a garden in front. The biggest difference is this place is absolutely silent. It's because most of the houses are empty. They were purchased sight unseen by their owners living in the United States, immigrants. Each house costs about $75,000. Or if you wanted a mortgage, it would be about $600 a month. That's 3 times what the average Wallaceanian makes. But for everyone who goes to Patchogue in search of riches, there's others left behind. Sohelia Angomarca has a walk-up kitchen on one of the tangled alleyways leading away from the town center. Wallaceanians on their way home from work stop off for chamales and warm chocolate milk. She's making some for me right now.
¿Puedes servirse dos?
No, uno.
No, dos.
Okay. Daylight is quickly fading, but the smell of her corn husks and chocolate overflow the neighborhood, so even a blind man could find his way to her kitchen. So much of Zohilia Angomarca's life centers around food.
It feels horrible that I cannot cook for my child because he's away from here.
Her son, Carlos, lives in Patchogue and sends money back to support his mom and sisters.
Every time I am cooking something, I am thinking about him, I am thinking he's eating, I am thinking who is giving him food. I don't have peace in my heart because I wish I could be serving him the same way I'm serving my 2 kids here.
The last time Zohilia cooked for her son was 10 years ago, when he left her for
Patchogue.
I took him to the place where he was supposed to live from. I cooked him bean soup and meat that he used to like a lot. And I told him, I'm going to cook this because I don't really know when I'm going to see you again. And he kept on saying, please, Mom, don't cry, because I'm doing this for you and I'm doing this to help you.
Then Zohilia begins talking to Carlos, hoping that 3,000 miles away, he will eventually hear her words.
I know you are listening to me, and then I know that I want to say that you are the only person who is taking care of me. I have you in my prayers, and that I want God to bless you because you never forget about me.
Can you tell me your name?
My name is Carlos.
Since Carlos has left Gualaceo, he's gained weight. He's been doing well, working in construction and sending money back to his mom.
Yo vengo para tratar de salir adelante, tanto para mí y para mi familia.
I come here to better myself and my family. They've suffered a lot in life, so I'm here to try to better them.
En pobreza y por eso estoy aquí.
Carlos came to the U.S. illegally, so visiting his mom isn't really an option. He tries to talk on the phone with his mother every week, but it wasn't until after Marcelo Lucero was killed that he told her about the beatings.
Yo solo sentí que me dieron un puñete por atrás.
I felt that I got hit from behind, I fell to the ground, and they started kicking and punching at me as well as my friend.
A mí igualmente a mi amigo. No sabría decirlo cuántas veces.
I wouldn't be able to tell you how many times I got kicked. The only thing I did was cover my face.
No sabría decirlo cuánto. El problema es que
the problem is they come in the car and they station their car. Two come in front and there's two in the back. So as the person who's walking alone is walking down the street, that's when they all gang up.
Perdón, como cacería.
It's like hunting.
Yo corrí,
I was able to get up and run, and the two guys that were hitting me ran back and started beating on my friend, too.
I talked to Carlos a year after his beating, and he wasn't the only one.
Tres personas.
Rosendo Molina says he was attacked and robbed by three young American men in November 2007.
They started hitting me, and I kept on screaming for them to stop hitting me.
A month after that, Aprina Benavite was punched in the head by three white kids who then stole his necklace. A month after that, Victor Bolivar was mugged and beaten by eight white kids. Bolivar says his beating was quite severe.
That was like eight people, I think. And then somebody hit me on the head. And then after that, I don't remember anything.
After the incident, he staggered home and passed out. When he woke up covered in blood, his family demanded that he go to the hospital. The most disturbing story came from Mauro Lopez, who claims to have been attacked four times. The worst was with a plastic baseball bat that broke his nose. This was the pattern of attacks that the white community in Patchogue and the police claimed they were unaware of, until Marcelo Lucero was killed.
He took out a knife that he had in his pocket, ran towards Marcelo with his arms extended, and plunged the knife into Marcelo Lucero's chest.
After Lucero, police started to reinvestigate other recent attacks.
I'm getting copies of the indictments copied now. There were eight victims.
Later, Suffolk County DA Tom Spoda would bring indictments.
Javier Monroy, another victim, was assaulted and robbed on March 17, 2008, by Anthony Hartford and others. He was hit in the back of the head with a hard object, and his wallet was taken from him. Luis Pina Tigre.
Charged were seven teenagers. Some pleaded guilty. One teen, Jeffrey Conroy, was convicted of killing Lucero and assaulting three others.
And Jeffrey Conroy, who was armed with a pipe. Conroy was armed with a pipe.
But there were more. The cops think it was a loose network of high schoolers who went out two or three times a week to, quote, beaner jump.
They were yelling racial slurs. The defendants called their victims things such as beaners and wetbacks.
But the cops said they didn't have enough evidence to arrest anyone else. There were more victims, too. Dozens. I talked to a dozen, the New York Times talked to a different dozen, and the cops, of course, found victims, too. Dozens of men getting jumped in the middle of the night by all-American suburban teens.
He was punched in the face, stomped on until he blacked out, and the defendants left him while he was still unconscious on the street.
Patchogue was in shock. How could these vicious attacks go on for so long without anyone knowing? How could the neighbors not say anything? How could the police not know? Dominic Verone is the chief of detectives for the Suffolk County Police Department.
there is soul searching, there is a self-evaluation of the way we do business, and a concern to make sure that we didn't overlook things that we didn't. The important thing here to remember is, if there was a pattern, community leaders, church leaders, various advocacy groups, no one seemed to know that this was going on, certainly to the extent that it was.
This is the shadow community. No one knew because the people being attacked didn't want the attention. As Carlos told me, it's the price of immigration.
What can I say? I mean, they think that we come to this country because we want to steal or do bad things. It's not like that. I mean, we just come here to work and take care of the family and help them out.
No nos venimos a trabajar para sacar en adelante a la familia de uno, ¿no?
Back in Gualaceo, I returned to Zohelia Angramarca's kitchen. We talked about Marcelo Lucero, about her son Carlos getting beat up. Carlos' sister joined us.
It was just God who saved him, and he could run away from them. So that's why he's still alive, but he thinks that if he stay with these guys, he might also have like the same end as Lucero. She was wondering why he never said anything to her. He said that he didn't want her to suffer.
I had some pictures of Carlos on my computer, and Zohelia wanted to see them. She promised if I came back, she would make me rosero, an amazing drink made from babaco, a papaya-like fruit that only grows in the mountains around Gualaceo.
Is it good?
Yes. Very good.
In her street-side kitchen, we drank rosero while she flipped through the pictures on my computer.
Está gordo, mijo.
He looks bad.
He
was thin here, and when he was at the States, he began gaining weight.
No.
It was sad to see him.
Am I bringing back bad memories?
No. No, está bien. Me siento bien porque le veo a mí, sino que emoción.
I'm not crying because I'm sad. It is because I feel happiness to see him. This is emotional to see my child.
It's nearly dark now, and the only light in the room is from the computer screen. Zohelia is huddled over it, flipping back and forth as a slow tear cuts through the dust of cornflour on her cheeks. Mothers and sisters are the ones left behind when Ecuadorians chase the American dream. Guillermo Ulla left his mother behind and lived in Patchogue for 18 years. He knows about the beatings and was friends with Marcelo Lucero. He made his money in Patchogue and came back and bought a house right next to the one Lucero bought for his mother.
Yeah. Sacrifices himself to make that home and things like that. He never lived there. I guess his mother, his sister, they enjoyed the home, big home, huge.
Ulla is a taxi driver, and when he found out I was a reporter from the U.S., he wanted to show me the best part of Gualaceo, a place called Mailas. So he took the day off work to drive me and my translator up into the ring of mountains towering over Gualaceo. Guillermo is tall, with a crooked nose that looks like it's seen many fights. But he says he never had to fight in Patchogue.
Around here, too, many people live over there, too, in New York, USA.
We've driven as far as the road can take us. It took hours, but we finally arrived in this small emerald green valley, about 10,000 feet above sea level. There are dozens of small ponds stretched out over the valley, where in the distance, a woman is fishing. The place Guillermo wants to show me is up in one of these mountains, so we begin walking up a grass-covered hill beside a small stream. There's no path, really, just a direction, upwards towards a hollow between two giant peaks, swaddled in clouds. But the higher we get, the more the clouds become fog and mist. The mist gets heavier and the mud gets deeper. At times, we sink up to our knees. I ask Guillermo, what's up here that's worth seeing? You'll see, as Ollie says.
We just hiked up, what was that, a mile? What's the mountain called?
Mailas. The way you realize how beautiful is the...
It's so beautiful. The mountains are just surrounding us. We're in a bowl, and they just go straight up. They're just almost vertical. And the clouds are just brushing, and you can't even see the tops of the mountains. And there's a lake here. We're like little tiny figurines in this massive mountain range.
Nice, quiet. Just hear the noise of the water.
And for a long while, Guillermo and I just stare in awe of this place. The mountains, the lake, the quiet. This, Guillermo tells me, is the Ecuadorian dream.
You know, here you live life. Over there, I was working hard, time first. That's the first thing in USA. Here you sometimes live. I don't have watch. Over there, I used to carry watch. Time is so important. You know, and now is my turn to say I want to relax, you know, because I really... Over there... I lost, you know, my time that I would be hang out, go out, having fun, have girls, you know, be comfortable, you know, living life.
Then Guillermo looks down at my microphone and speaks directly to you, the listeners, from the belly of these huge mountains, green and full of life.
I used to live in your country, guys, for 18 years. I appreciate that country, man. I guess I don't want to go back.
Bean Jumping was produced by Charles Lane. Thanks to Grace Valdivieso for on-site translations. The show was mixed by Jared Weisbrot. You can listen to this program anytime you want just by visiting our website, soundprint.org. Soundprint is produced by the Soundprint Media Center in association with WAMU and American University. CDs of Soundprint episodes are available for a small fee. You can call toll-free 1-888-38-TAPES. That's 1-888-38-TAPES. Or you can order online at soundprint.org. Send us an email. Tell us what's on your mind. Your comments help us keep on doing what we do. The best way to get in touch is by email. The address is talkback@soundprint.org. Soundprint is production assistant Nkechi Mogekwu and audio engineer Jared Weisbrot. Our executive producer is Moira Rankin. I'm Lisa Simeone.